the Heat finally get things right. The Cavs get another injury. Jokic has another big night. And the G League Celtics nearly pull off a huge upset. This is Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
To Locked On NBA, your daily source for all things NBA. We're glad that you're with us, and we're thankful that you're making us your first listen each and every day. We're free and available on all platforms. Today's episode is brought to you by NBA Top Shot. NBA Top Shot is the future of being an NBA fan. Own officially licensed rare NFTs of the greatest moments from NBA history. Sign up today at lockedon.nbatopshot.com. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and the co-host of Locked On Nuggets. His name is David Ramil. He's co-host of Locked On Heat. You can catch his work at DRamil13 on Twitter. 9 games tonight in the NBA, David, and the playoff races are getting intense.
It is. It's an interesting night because watching this span of games, and it's a lot of games mean everything and nothing simultaneously because it's so hard to parse anything substantial because some teams are going through some major injuries, including the first game that we'll be talking about tonight, the Boston Celtics taking on the Toronto Raptors.
That's right. The Toronto Raptors, with the unfortunate news that Robert Williams has suffered a torn meniscus, a lateral tear in his meniscus, and will be out indefinitely, at least going to be 6 weeks, if not more. They also decided to rest some guys. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum were both questionable yesterday, wound up playing in the win versus the Wolves. So they rested those guys as well as Al Horford. So instead, the Celtics threw out the opening lineup of Aaron Nesmith, Grant Williams, Daniel Tice, Derek White, and Marcus Smart. Sam Hauser played 21 minutes. Luke Kornet played 15. And wouldn't you know it, as is often the case in the NBA, the B team hung around. The Celtics got out to a big lead and managed to be in this thing all the way to the end. The Raptors had to score to force overtime, where eventually Pascal Siakam's 40 points was too much for the shorthanded Seas. David, I'll ask you this. Celtics fans in my mentions very upset at the possibility that this could be a good series based off of the fact that, well, we almost beat them with our B League team. And I'm like, guys, this is what happens in the NBA. Whenever a team is shorthanded, one team lets down, the other team picks up. I'm not surprised that this was close. The Celtics are a well-coached crew. I would definitely think the Celtics would win in a series, but the Raptors, I think, in this spot, they weren't prepared. They weren't up for it. Guys aren't on the scouting report. The Celtics caught them off guard, had a chance to steal a win, but the Raptors wound up getting it done. I wouldn't say it's a good win for Toronto, but I wouldn't say it's a bad win either.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's absolutely right. Anytime you can come away with a victory, even if against a shorthanded team like this one, it's a good one. It's an overtime one, and you get a strong showing from Pascal Siakam, who's been quietly under the radar all season long. And I know he's in that conversation of whether or not he's not getting enough attention and things of that sort. I know Toronto fans always feel like they're never getting enough attention. But this is a good game to put him, I guess, back in other people's eyes, the focus there. But for the Raptors, you know, to be able to, you know, find a way to win. And to your point, I like that Boston came away with that kind of energy. And I saw it many times last week against the Heat, you know, where teams that were undermanned found a way to win. And maybe those were more about the problems to get on the Miami side of things. But guys love the opportunity to play more minutes. They look forward to the opportunity. Again, towards the end of the season, they're looking for, you know, a way to establish themselves as key rotation players for the playoffs, or just a chance to parlay whatever minutes they do get over the end of the season into an upcoming contract. So you're always going to get that kind of a off-the-bench boost, and that's what happened for Boston tonight. I think it kind of it does present a bit of a problem for Toronto in that they couldn't put away this team, even with the energy boost that the Boston Celtics provided, and despite the 40 points from Pascal Siakam. But to your point, the Celtics, a well-coached team, and again, came out with a lot of fire tonight.
Yeah, Derek White and Marcus Smart were kind of the lead initiators on offense, and White finished with 15 points on 16 shots. He actually shot 1 of 8 inside of three-point range. Usually three-point is his limitation, but he was bad inside. But he did have 8 assists, thought he played really well. Marcus Smart in this spot is going to take a lot of shots, and he took 25. That's just what Marcus Smart's going to do. Marcus Smart's going to look at this and go, it's Marcus Smart time. I thought Grant Williams gave them really good minutes. in reality, what a lot of this is two teams that switch. They're big, they're athletic, they switch all 1 through 5. And that combination, yeah, I think, is one of the reasons why it kind of bogged down for long stretches and the Raptors couldn't really get the offense that they needed. The Raptors are still very limited offensively. I think the Celtics showed what you can do to them when you do play that kind of a scheme. Elsewhere.
Well, before we move on, I had a quick question for you. I'm curious, from your perspective, how does this team move on without Robert Williams over the next few weeks? What's the major adjustment that they have to make?
So, I mean, Daniel Theis plays more minutes and he was good tonight. Theis is serviceable. You've got Horford that you can lean in depending on the matchup. I think one of the things that they're fortunate in is in the Eastern Conference, I think that they're going to be okay depending on the matchup. If it's Vucevic and the Bulls, you can probably get away with Tyson Horford. He's going to play drop. It's going to have to be your defense. Like, you can switch all some of the time and dare Vucevic to beat you. If it's the Sixers, nobody defends Embiid better than Horford. Right. Nobody in the league is able to do that. And the Celtics will send enough doubles, I think, to give them a fighting chance. If it's Miami, they're going to switch everything anyway. So you can just switch everything and it's just going to be a switch fest like Warriors Rockets from a couple of years ago. If it's Brooklyn in a 2-7, you're fine there. You know, Andre Drummond, you would welcome that. You would play 5 out with Grant Williams and spread him out and kind of dare Andre Drummond to be the difference maker on the offensive glass. The thing about the Celtics is that they're so big, so physical, and I think they have enough options that I think they're going to be okay until Williams gets back. I don't think they can win the title without Williams. It's going to be a matter of whether or not he can return in the postseason or not.
Good point.
So elsewhere, the Miami Heat, after quite the week, David, in South Beach, a lot of drama. Really? But it turns out if we're looking for rock bottom, if we're looking for exactly where it stops, the Sacramento Kings are the cure for what ails you.
I use that exact same line in the recap today. It's like, oh, the Kings coming to town, good chance to pull away for a victory, and this turned out to a blowout. Look, Miami, not perfect, looking to make some changes, and they did so to the starting lineup, benching Duncan Robinson in favor of birthday boy Max Strus, who celebrated his 26th birthday today. Strus wasn't particularly good, but he provides a little bit of a different flair offensively. He's not they don't change the offense as much as they do with Duncan out there, because they're constantly running off screens and they take a lot of time in the shot clock just to get him these open looks. And yes, he has gravity and all those things, but unless he's knocking those shots down at 40 or 50%, he's not as effective. Strus a little bit more willing to attack the basket. And there were rotation changes all around. Victor Oladipo and Markieff Morris both didn't play. Both were available. And they just simply got the, no coach's decision there. And look, it worked out. Jimmy Butler spoke after the game, said guys knew what to do in that second unit. Duncan Robinson got better looks playing alongside Tyler Hero, who came back with a strong showing. And that was what was missing for a lot of those 4 games that they lost, was Tyler coming off the bench and providing that spark offensively. But they staggered Jimmy Butler's and Kyle Lowry's minutes out on the floor so that they always had a playmaker out there. Jimmy playing alongside that second unit, or Kyle playing along that second unit, had some cohesion there, some chemistry that we haven't seen. But even then, look, it was a strong showing from Miami. They had a really good game, but the Kings are the Kings, and they were without Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox. So how much can we really take from this? I'm not sure. I think that these changes to the rotation will probably be semi-permanent in the sense that they'll probably move forward with this for the next few weeks of the regular season. I'm not sure if they'll continue doing this in the postseason. I think Duncan's earned the right to start in the playoffs, but yet, here we are making changes to the lineup with just a couple of weeks left. And that's kind of the problem for the Miami Heat and other teams around the league, is that they're dealing with injuries. They're dealing with trying to incorporate players back. Victor's comeback kind of threw everything off kilter. They were making changes in late March that they were supposed to be making in early November or something like that. And they haven't really been able to adjust. And Jimmy tonight had a really big game, 27 points, very effective, 10 of 14 off the floor. So I don't know. I don't know what to make from this Heat win other than they just beat up a really bad Kings team.
That's pretty much it. I do kind of wonder about correlation causation, right? Between like, oh, Hero comes back and look, everything's kind of better. Like it feels like he is integral to their success, that like he's absolutely just going to have to be like an absolutely huge part, especially for them offensively. I mean, they were able to score tonight because the Kings give you whatever you want, like whatever it is that you're looking for. Kings tragic number, by the way, is 3 for elimination from playoff contention. I think Miami, it's good to stop the bleeding. And right, now, this is the thing with the NBA. I always love this, that, and coaches say this all the time, the best thing about the NBA is that there's another game in 48 hours. The worst thing about the NBA is that there's another game in 48 hours. Like, no matter what, you when you're in the midst of all this bad stuff, all you gotta do is like wait 48 hours, and you got another chance to stop the bleeding. And now, you know, they're facing the Boston Celtics. They're in Boston on Wednesday. Big matchup, Eastern Conference, no Robert Williams. This is a chance for Bam Adebayo to really shine. This is a chance for the Heat to reclaim control for the one seed in the Eastern Conference. They're in a good spot to be able to take control, back control for that one seed. I don't know if you want it, depending on what happens with the Nets, but there's no way for you to know which spot the Nets are going to land in if they land in a spot. So, you know, that for me is what's in, like, we'll know more about the Heat and how serious the various issues are that have been hinted at beyond just the altercation. We'll know more about that this summer based off of what the organization does. But for right now, you know, you just got to get through this and try and make a run and try and change the vibes in the playoff run. And, you know, being the Kings, hey, it's worse. It's better than losing, right? It's better than losing to the Knicks or taking that L. One more in the Eastern Conference, the Chicago Bulls tonight. Man, I really thought they were going to get this one. I thought this was the one where I was like, okay, the Bulls should be able to stop the bleeding now, and they can't. The New York Knicks get the win 109-104, despite shooting just 43% from the field and 34% from 3-point range. The Knicks got to the line 35 times. Bulls got to the line 33 times. Julius Randle was just 1 of 9 in this game, but Alec Burks, 9 of 19 for 27 points, 6 boards, 3 assists. I thought he was sensational in the spot, hit some big threes late to get them the separation that the Knicks needed as the Knicks try and stay alive in the chase. A very false and faint hope for a playoff appearance, a postseason appearance. Their tragic number after tonight is 3 as well. But they get the win, and Chicago now tied with the Raptors in the loss column. They do hold tiebreaker over Toronto, but they're now really in the thick of it, and there's a real chance that they can slip into the play-in spot very easily at the 7. This despite 37 from DeMar DeRozan and 27 from Zach LaVine, but they just didn't get hardly anything else from anybody else. Nikola Vucevic had 16. Ayo Dosunmu had 10, and that nobody else in double figures, while the Knicks got, you know, 28 from RJ Barrett on 10 of 24 shooting. Not efficient, but the production's there. Mitchell Robinson puts in 16, and Obi Toppin getting some more minutes finally. He puts up 17 for them in good minutes, and the Chicago Bulls take the L.
Yeah, the Toppin minutes were great, getting the nod over a struggling Randle there. He provided a huge spark for the Knicks. But the issue is mostly about, I mean, who cares really about what the Knicks are going to do? It's all about what the Bulls can accomplish. And I think I see some of the same issues that I was just pointing out in Miami, too. They're trying to reincorporate Patrick Williams. They can't quite figure it out. They're still going through major injury issues because they're missing Lonzo Ball. Alex Caruso has been, you know, okay in his comeback, but he hasn't provided the same spark that he did earlier in the season. So their whole rotation's kind of overturned right now, and they can't quite figure out their identity despite the strong showing from DeRozan. They still struggled late in the game, and I think that's a telling, you know, part of what makes this Bulls team somewhat fallible here. So it's interesting to see how teams incorporate players late in the season when they didn't expect to be doing so, and how they adjust moving forward, especially with the postseason just a few weeks away.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll go through the Western Conference, including the Nuggets having to eke out a win out east. The Grizzlies showing up big time once again, even more shorthanded. And the Spurs hot on the trail. Those Los Angeles Lakers, the final play-in spot. We'll talk about all that and more when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I have to say about NBA Top Shot. You know, NBA Top Shot's the officially licensed NFT of the NBA. You get to connect with a passionate community of NBA fans across the globe and build your collection with your favorite moments from NBA history. It's the future of what being an NBA fan looks like. It's part trading cards, part stock market, part fantasy sports with a built-in loyalty program. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards and made it easier to buy, sell, and trade by removing the hassle of card grading, shoe boxes, and binders. I will confess that I do love a good pack of cards, and I do get a thrill whenever I open a Top Shot. Their 24/7 peer-to-peer marketplace lets you scroll through all your favorite players and teams. Once you find the moment you've been looking for, you can buy it in a couple of clicks. I hear all the time, why would I buy something I could watch on YouTube for free? And I tell those people, it's not about watching a highlight. It's about having ownership in the stock market of the NBA's greatest moments. Owning the NBA Top Shot moments can get you access to unbuyable, once-in-a-lifetime experiences. Like last year, they flew out Suns fans that had Suns NFTs for game five of the finals, or they flew out a group of fans to New York for the draft. They had rookie moments. And they got to have dinner with four future round picks the night before they were drafted and play basketball with the New York Knicks, Obi Toppin. He would dunk on me a lot. If you sign up for Pop Shot today, the best way to start is getting yourself a starter pack. You can even pull a moment of a superstar like LeBron or KD, or star rookies like Cade Cunningham or Evan Mobley for just $9. Head over to lockedon.nbatopshot.com to start building your collection today. We're also brought to you by Truebill. You know why free trials renew without your consent? I caught like four of them this week on Truebill. Just random things that I picked up a year ago and was all like, oh, I'm definitely going to use this. I'm not using them. I'm not using them at all. And Truebill helped me find out that I was wasting money on them and save money on them. It's a business scam to get you keeping those auto renewals up. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill and take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is a new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, so Truebill makes it a breeze. Just link your accounts, and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. And your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions, so you don't have to mess with it. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped them save over $100 million. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for making this part of your day and making us your first listen each and every day. Make your second listen Locked On Now. It's got nightly recaps of all the NBA games for our panel of local experts. It's free and available on all platforms. Check it out wherever you get podcasts. That's Locked On Now. Back here with David Ramil, we're breaking down the Monday night games in the NBA. And David, the Denver Nuggets, I got to tell you, I had this one circled as a big old L for the Denver Nuggets. I thought this was going to be a loss because it's a Nuggets team that's exhausted at the end of the season from a lot of injuries. They're dragging. They had to go to the East Coast. It's a Hornets team that's played really well as of late. A Hornets team with a lot of offensive firepower, which can oftentimes give the Nuggets trouble. And I'm not going to lie here. The only reason the Nuggets won is that they have Nikola Jokic. That's pretty much the only reason that they won this game. I hate to boil that down because he did get 21 points from Aaron Gordon. In the first half, he was great. Will Barton hit some threes in the second half in the third quarter. But Jokic finishes with 26 points, 19 rebounds, 11 assists, light work, two steals, four turnovers, plus 21 in the box score, 9 of 17 from the field, and 8 of 12 from the line. He scored six straight to put the game out of reach for the Hornets. Thought the Hornets honestly played well, especially Miles Bridges, who had 27 and 11. He was really impactful, just driving at the rim constantly. LaMelo Ball was a little bit inefficient from the field. I'll say this. I felt like the Hornets left some stuff on the table here. Both teams were able to create really good looks versus really bad defense and couldn't knock it down. And so it just became this like real squeaker between who could basically convert on second chance opportunities. And Jokic hit, I think, three second chance opportunities in that fourth quarter. And that wound up being the difference in this one.
Oh, his former teammate Mason Plumlee not able to stop him, not able to derail his MVP campaign at this point?
Not really. I love Mason Plumlee. He tried. He tried really hard. And it was funny because you could tell that Jokic respects him and likes Mason. He was a good teammate. And so he didn't really like put him in the blender. And then like late in the fourth, it was time, and he started scoring at will on him, and it was.
That's scary, isn't it? That he could just dictate exactly when.
Yeah, exactly. He's just like, and I'm sorry, Mace, I got to do this to you, buddy. Hornets lose. So now they are going to be checking the old spreadsheet here. They fall back into the ninth spot, a half game back of the Brooklyn Nets, who move into eighth. And they are now, let's see, boy, that's a difference of games here between the Hawks and the Hornets. I'm doing the math in my head. They're one game up, half game up on the Atlanta Hawks as well. So back into a tie, basically, for the 9 seed. Hornets, you know, this was a tough one to get. Yeah. I don't think you can really blame Charlotte. I will say this, Charlotte's going to be okay. Like, the worst case scenario is that the Hornets are in the 9-10. There's really no chance for the Knicks or Wizards to catch them. So the Hornets are going to be okay. What was I going to say? Oh, that's right. I know what I was going to say. How about Terry Rozier with a big shot down the stretch, even on a bad night? I'm obligated to talk about Terry Rozier every time I podcast with you.
That's okay. I don't mind. Yeah, 5-14 from the floor. So not a great night for Scary Terry, but he did have that big shot when I thought they were going to be able to come back and steal a win against the Nuggets there. But, you know, this Hornets team, I don't know exactly what to make of them. I don't think they know what to make of themselves. Again, that offensive firepower is always there. And they're doing this all without Gordon Hayward, too. So I think they deserve some credit. And yet they kind of give me the vibe where if they're, you know, in a play-in tournament, and they could probably match up with anybody, even a Brooklyn team. If they catch fire and they have a more efficient night from Lonzo, they can have a chance at, you know, knocking off a better team, I think. And I think maybe even not necessarily in a playoff series, but I think as far as a play-in tournament team, they can make the playoffs. I think that's a fair assessment of this group. And I think that's what they're playing for right now, just an opportunity. And they've been certainly playing better over the last few weeks, 7-3 over the last 10 games. Isaiah Thomas has provided a little bit of a spark there too. So they've had some nice things going on there. And I think they're still a pretty good team, but you know, not with a capacity to be able to be any kind of dangerous, challenge in the playoffs or anything like that.
Denver's just dragging. Like, they got the win, and they got a win versus a team that's, you know, competing for a play-in spot. But Denver's just dragging, and it's very evident that they're out of steam. I'm just not.
What happened to Gordon in the second half there? What, did they just go away from him?
Yeah, he does this where it's just like he'll have a really impactful first half, and then the second half, basically a lot of what happens is the defense will ignore him in favor of focusing in on the DHOs,
right,
between Monte Morris, Will Barton, and Jokic, and then Gordon will get loose and get a lot of back cuts. And also Gordon runs out of steam and stops attacking, starts settling for jumpers. And, you know, Malone's always hammering on that, trying to get him to attack more. But at this point, Gordon's played more minutes, more games. This is a lot of basketball for him, especially in a short amount of time after last year. So he, Will Barton, Monte Morris, Nikola Jokic, the starting unit is really dragging. And they're just trying to get, honestly, to the end of the season. Elsewhere in the Western Conference, Memphis just does not play around. They do not. So, all right, the Warriors decide to punt this game, and they go ahead and no Draymond Green tonight, no Steph Curry, no Klay Thompson, no Steph Curry, obviously, no Klay Thompson, no Otto Porter. Andre Iguodala does return. The Nuggets are without Ja Morant, and Jaren Jackson actually is out this game as well. That's two key members of the two best players for the Memphis Grizzlies. And boy, it did not matter a bit because Dylan Brooks had it going. Desmond Bane had it going. De'Anthony Melton had it going, including a monster dunk that you can find on social media. Melton absolutely just destroyed the rim. Melton was 8-13 for 21 points, 6 boards in this one, and a plus 21. Brooks was great. Efficient night for Dylan Brooks, which is always key. 9-15 from the field, hit some turnarounds, actually attacked the rim a little bit. And Desmond Bane just continues doing what he does, which is 22 points, 5-6 from 3-point range. He was a plus 31. They outscored the Warriors by 31 points when he was on the floor. The Warriors had very little offense outside of Jordan Poole. They had very little defense overall. The Warriors now are in, like, I don't know exactly when this stops, the fall. Like, I don't know when the drop is going to stop for them because they're at 28 losses now. They're one up on Dallas. They're two up on Utah. They're three up on Denver. It is not inconceivable to slide all the way to 6. They are not going to be in the play-in, I feel pretty confident. But Golden State, I just don't know when or how they're going to be able to stabilize this given how well the Mavericks are playing right now. I think the 4 seed is almost like, I think it's likely the Warriors finish in the 4 spot right now.
At best, right? That they finish at 4th. I think that's a really good point. I don't, you know, this team needs their superstars. And that's the whole thing about this. There's such a high variance for this group, because when you have your stars aligned, when you have Curry playing his very best, when you have Draymond changing the course of the game while not impacting it as a scorer, and you have Klay able to be consistent and good, well, you're unstoppable. I mean, this was a team earlier in the season that looked like they were going to be a powerhouse. And then, like, you know, they've fallen apart due to injury, and Curry struggled at times throughout the season. So it's been a long year for them. But I feel confident that they can turn it around. So, I mean, despite wherever they end up in the final seedings, I think there'll still be a dangerous team that nobody wants to face. I mean, with the exception of Phoenix, I don't think any team feels particularly comfortable. Maybe Memphis to some extent. I like to see Desmond Bain take his productivity up a notch when Ja Morant's out of the lineup too. So that was a strong showing for him. That second quarter was, you know, a disaster for Golden State. They only wound up scoring 37 points in the first half. So that's not good. We've seen Curry come close to scoring that in a quarter. So I think, when he's out on the floor, that's why like I said it earlier, it's so hard to kind of take anything from these games as teams are missing key players and things of that sort. Is this spell disaster for a Golden State? Not really. I think it's just a bad game in the middle, of this long stretch of the regular season here as teams are looking ahead to the next couple of weeks. One way or the other, they're either looking to the playoffs or Cancun.
The Grizzlies, by the way, have clinched a top four seed and home court in the first round. They clinched that tonight. Their magic number for the two seed is now one. So they can get that done this week and be able to basically rest up the rest of the season. So that's a big win, I think, for them. Elsewhere in the Western Conference, the Spurs chasing the Los Angeles Lakers keep kind of coming. They've got an easy win versus a Houston Rockets team, but the Rockets hung in here. The Rockets play competitive. This was like the ideal tanking loss for the Rockets. They hung in. They got a good performance from Jalen Green, who had 30 points on 24 shots, 10 of 24 shooting, sure, but like showed flashes, got to do a lot of stuff that he does. You know, Alperen Şengün with a quiet night, 12-7. He was just 3 of 10 from the field. An inefficient night for the Rockets versus a Spurs defense has been kind of questionable, but yeah. For the Spurs, man, DeJounte Murray, if you have not had a chance to watch the Spurs this season, DeJounte Murray is so much fun to watch. His change of pace, his hesitation dribble, his explosiveness, what he does on the defensive end, just he has been absolutely terrific for them. 33 points, 11 assists, 7 boards for DeJounte, 11 of 18 from the field. They got 17 from Jakob Poeltl and 21 for Keldon Johnson. And that's pretty much all they needed. To get past the Rockets, who, clearly the Rockets are not like super invested in getting a dub, but the Rockets hung in this game. The Rockets led in this game, but the Spurs were able to get it done. And now, David, I can't believe this, but the Spurs are tied in the win column, back one game in the loss column from the Los Angeles Lakers, who play the Dallas Mavericks on Tuesday night, and LeBron James will not play. Should the Lakers lose that game, which it definitely seems like they will, the San Antonio Spurs will actually take over the 10th seed in the Western Conference.
Absolute chaos. It's fun, isn't it? I mean, the Spurs find a way to kind of fall ass backwards into a win here, despite shooting 24% from 3-point range. I don't know. I don't know what their ultimate goal is. I guess the playoffs would be fine. It gives them something to do for the next couple of weeks, but, the possibility of the Lakers falling completely out of the play-in tournament, that's, I don't think anybody expected that. I think the expectations for that group at the start of the season, they had all these Hall of Famers, that they were going to be this great team and everything else like that. I think a lot of that was overstated. Having said that, I didn't see them being the 11th seed in the Western Conference either. And that's kind of where they seem pretty close to being.
I really think, in my opinion, I don't think the Lakers want to be in the play-in. LeBron was so dismissive of it last year, and you could just tell he was annoyed by it. And this year, he knows that the squad can't make a run. I genuinely don't know, like, if this team – I'll say this. I thought the Spurs really kind of were angling to miss it. I thought the Spurs were kind of like, well, we'd kind of rather have the draft. And then the players have made interesting comments. Like DeJounte Murray, after the win over the weekend, said, as players, it's something we really want. And the kind of like the tone of that, I think, was like, hey, this is something that we decided. And so I think the front office is like, okay, I guess we're doing this. If you guys really want to, I guess we'll make a run at it. We'll see if they can, you know, sneak up and catch somehow an eight seed to make it. But boy, yeah, I will say the Spurs have been fun. They're missing. They're obviously like there's some big pieces that are missing from them, but there's like the semblance, I think, of something there, which is kind of interesting at least. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll hit the rest of the games on the slate on Monday in the NBA. But first, I need to tell you about Rock Auto. So with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local auto chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? Like, I've got a SV Rogue, and the SL is a different model, and the parts just really aren't the same for them. And wait for the person behind the counter to order the parts on their computer. Instead, just go to rockauto.com. You got it in your pocket. Just open up your phone and go to the website. It's easy and really simple, and it's going to save you time and money, including, you know, sometimes at these big auto parts stores, you're going to pay 30%, 50%, or 100% more on the same parts. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Their prices are reliably low for every customer, and they got everything that you need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution for your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On, and their How'd You Hear About Us box, they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for making us part of your day and making us your first listen each and every day. Make sure that you check out the rest of the shows all throughout the week with all sorts of great hosts like Adam Arez, my co-host from Locked On Nuggets, and Wes Goldberg from Locked On Heat. Like, all sorts of fun stuff going on the network, as well as you've got, check out Locked On Heat for more on the Heat and their interesting situation currently. And check out Locked On Nuggets to see if Nikola Jokic, how his chances are for a second MVP. David, let's wrap up the night in the NBA, and let's start. Where else can we start but with a barn burner of the Atlanta Hawks versus the Indiana Pacers?
Yeah, big game from Clint Capella, 22 points. That's, I mean, I can't believe it. I thought Trae Young would be the leading scorer, but no, he was not. He finished with just 14 points on a rather ineffective 4-of-13 shooting. They had also a big game from Bojan Bogdanovic. He finished with 29 points. So they were carried there to a victory against a woeful Pacers team who, you know, I love talking about. The Pacers going through injury issues, kind of rebuilding at this point, obviously. They made their midseason acquisitions. Those really haven't panned out. Sacramento Kings Midwest has not been as good a group as you might think. They've got some potential there. Tyrese Haliburton with a nice night, 25 points, but he healed with 26 points of his own, too. So a solid game for the Indiana Pacers, but this is more about the Hawks, who continue to show some life as they're trying to cling to a spot in the play-in tournament there. We talked about the standings before. Right now, they are what? And the 10th seed, 38-37. So they managed to climb over 500 with tonight's win, with a slight game edge over the New York Knicks there, and trying to challenge the Charlotte Hornets for the 9th seed. I don't know what to make of this Hawks team. No John Collins tonight, going through some injury issues there. No DeAndre Hunter either. The Hawks they don't seem like the same team that they did last year. I'm not sure if it was the coaching bump of Nate McMillan. Maybe he's already worn on some of these players. I haven't heard anything about that necessarily, but I'm just saying that he's just not connecting with them, and they've just struggled to find their identity the way that they had last year. They're not exactly poised for any kind of challenge in the playoffs or anything like that. But I guess when you have an electric player like Trae Young, maybe things might swing your way.
16 assists for Young tonight. So despite a bad shooting night, 4-13, he did drop the dimes. Bogdanovic was a recipient of a lot of those, and he lit it up for 29 points. I thought it was interesting. Tyrese Haliburton, I really liked his control in this game. He had a lot of patience and was good. Got him some good reps versus that drop coverage that Capella plays. He was 9 of 19 from the field for 25 points with 13 dimes tonight. a really good performance from Haliburton. They actually won his minutes. Like, it was the bench, really, for the
bench
the Hawks was what got it done. But I liked a lot of what I saw actually out of the Pacers. You know, Buddy Hield had a big game, 10 of 15 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3. Such a good shooter. Only got scored by one when he was on the floor, and 26 points. So leading scorer for the Pacers tonight. Pacers have shut down TJ Warren, and then today it was announced Miles Turner will not return. Doesn't seem like Malcolm Brogdon's going to be playing much the rest of the way. But there's some interesting stuff. It'll be really interesting to see what the Pacers do next season with what they've got. They have a lot of good players. They got to figure out how to make them work and get them to win. Elsewhere, boy, is this a familiar story. The Cleveland Cavaliers suffered more bad injury luck. Evan Mobley turned an ankle pretty bad, and so he's out. Lauri Markkanen got banged up, and he left the game and was back on the bench later. The Cavs do manage to get by, though. They get the win, which was very big for them, trying to keep pace with the Raptors to try and climb out of the seventh spot. They get the win over the Orlando Magic, who, you know, obviously the Magic are with where they're at in the season. I'm going to say it again. I'm going to keep saying this. Wendell Carter Jr. has been really good this year. Like, I was as low as I could be on him in Chicago, and I've loved watching him play this year. It's been so much fun. 15, 12, and 6 for Wendell Carter in 26 minutes. Like, definitely a load management night for the Magic as they played just everybody. They played so many dudes, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 guys tonight, trying out guys for next season, which is totally fine with where they're at in the year. The Cavs still needed big shots from Darius Garland down the stretch. He hit a tough floater and a big pull-up three to put this game kind of out of reach. 25 points, 12 dimes for Garland, who has been sensational this season. Mobley played just 13 minutes before getting hurt. So now no Jared Allen. Mobley may miss time. We'll see about Markkanen and if he's able to go. The Cavs are just running out of bodies at this point.
Yeah, the issue for the Cavs was clearly offensively, but also defensively. Without Allen out there, and he provides a spark offensively, obviously, but without him as their defensive anchor, this is a team. We were talking about the Celtics before. There were moments there where they were just completely discombobulated. Mo Bamba spread out for some big shots down the stretch. I mean, they had some nice plays from the rest of that Magic roster too. They just couldn't contain Wendell Carter, so as you mentioned. I have a hard time seeing what this Cavs team can do if Allen doesn't come back anytime soon, if Mobley is out for a prolonged period of time. They don't have enough depth there. They lost Dean Wade for the rest of the season too. So on the flip side of that, they did get Caris LeVert, a big game from him. Well, not really a big game, but he was at least a spark on occasion. 4-15, kind of ineffective there, but he also had 7 rebounds and 6 assists. And you know, it's what we talked about when the trade was made. He's another ball handler, another initiator, somebody they desperately need. Maybe that offense will come around. If he does, then he can provide a much more consistent spark. But at least there was something to his game tonight to help them. But defensively, I'm just not sure what to make of this Cavs team without Allen in the middle.
Final game on the slate, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Portland Trailblazers played in a game which neither team really wanted to get the win because they're both clearly angling for draft position. I have a bigger question about this, though, for you. This is actually, I think, a really interesting question, David. Who has a better long-term future? The Oklahoma City Thunder with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and all of their draft stock, or the Portland Trailblazers with Damian Lillard, and there's rumors of Jeremy Grant being a possible addition in the offseason. They're likely to re-sign Yusuf Nurkic as of right now, based off of what league sources say. They're going to get Anthony Simons back next to Dame. Who's got a brighter future over the next, say, 3-4 years between those two teams?
To me, it's always what you, the bird in hand over two in the push, right? I mean, you've got Dame Lillard, and if he stays consistent to what he said all along about being loyal to that group, then you still got the superstar that you could only hope to get if you hit the draft right, as you assume that Sam Presti will. But you also have the opportunity to take all those draft picks and trade them for that superstar if somebody's willing to exchange, for a brighter future. To me, it's Portland. I know you probably disagree. I hate the draft. Maybe it's years of following Miami. I'm not a big believer in the draft and what it can do. Like, yes, you can get a good draft pick, but so often you wind up failing, and blowing up seasons just for the opportunity to get draft picks is, it just seems like a bad way to go about getting things. And maybe that's because, again, you know, you don't have a team that can't acquire a superstar, you don't lure free agents. And so you have to build the right way through the draft. But I've just never been a big fan of amassing all those draft picks and giving up the opportunity to win now.
Yeah, I know. I think it's tough. I mean, it depends on like what the Blazers are able to pull off in the offseason, right? Because if you're a free agent and you're looking at and you're nervous, I think Dame's going to do the right thing and say very openly, like keep saying, hey, I want to win here. I'm going to be here. You should come here. I'm going to be here. But if you're a star player or even just like a really marquee guy, Jeremy Grant, I think, is an interesting one. Because if Grant feels like he can take the CJ spot, like that's the question, I think, for Grant. Is Grant left Denver in part because he didn't want to be third fiddle? He didn't want to be fourth fiddle, honestly, behind MPJ and Jamal Murray behind Jokic. So if he feels like, okay, it's going to be Dame and then me and then Anthony Simons and Nurkic, okay, that I think is part of the equation. If they get Jeremy Grant, does that lift their ceiling? I think so. It lifts their floor. Like, they'll be better. Grant's a good player. He's got some bad tendencies, but in general, I think he helps. You know, if they win the lottery, obviously, like, that's huge. If they get a top three player, then I think no question it's going to be Portland. The interesting question is if OKC wins the lottery, right? Like, if OKC's got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey, and some of the other guys that they've kind of developed, who, you know, Lou Dort looked really good, et cetera. And then they add, you know, a Chet Holmgren or a Jabari Smith or even an AJ Griffin. Like, if they add another guy, then I think OKC starts to look really interesting. But I'm still not sure, from my perspective, and I could be wrong on this. Like, it's a matter of, do you believe that there's like a guy in this draft? And if there's not, then I think that they definitely, you got a guy in Dame. No question. Right. So I'm with you, I think, on taking the bird in the hand.
Yeah. I mean, if everything breaks right for Oklahoma City, they get that guy, they could win 25 games next year instead of just 20.
For sure. All right. Let's go wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to check out Locked On Heat with David. You can follow his work at DRamil13. You can follow me over at HP Basketball and catch me on Locked On Nuggets as well. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have yourselves a great week. Enjoy all the content here on Locked On NBA. We'll see you guys again next time. Thanks for joining us.